And in a couple of days, it'll be the fourth anniversary of the dreadful war in Ukraine. Peace talks ended this past week with no breakthrough. The New York Times suggests as many as 140,000 Ukrainian and 325,000 Russian soldiers have been killed in this war, not to mention enormous numbers of wounded and disabled and thousands of citizens killed or injured. More than 12 million people will need humanitarian help this year because of that invasion. Millions have been forced from their homes and towns. Mike Seawright, the man who gave up a successful career as an investment banker to found the New Zealand charity Relief Aid, has been into Ukraine many times in the past 4 years. We've also interviewed Mike when he's been in Syria, and Relief Aid's been on the ground in Gaza as well, with team members killed while working to deliver aid. Mike's joining us this morning, and so will Ksenia Zaborik, who's led Relief Aid's Ukraine operation for the past 3 years. Mike, good morning to you, first of all.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for having us on the show again.
Many times we have talked, you and I. How much aid actually has your New Zealand charity been able to deliver into Ukraine?
Jim, 4 years ago I crossed into Ukraine a few days after the war started. I had some friends in Turkey, of all places, who provided me a driver to get to the Romanian-Ukraine border, but I literally knew no one in Ukraine. It was really cold, bitterly cold, freezing at the border. There were thousands. I remember seeing thousands of people fleeing out of the country. There were babies in bassinets, elderly who couldn't walk, kilometres of cars in a massive queue desperately wanting to escape the war. Thousands were leaving, but only three of us were crossing into Ukraine, myself and two journalists. The two journalists crossed the border, did their piece, they did a piece to camera, and then immediately returned to Romania. And here I was just standing on the Ukrainian side of the border, completely alone, thinking, how do we help and how do we make a difference? This is a really big country, as I certainly discovered later. A few days later, having slept on a couch, driven across the country, made some new friends, created some new networks, we started delivering trauma medical equipment and smuggling food to families in besieged Bucha. I don't know if people remember this, but this is where all the extrajudicial killings were happening. It was an area occupied by Russian forces. It was really difficult and practically dangerous. And we had to float our aid across a river as the bridges had been bombed and destroyed, and fighting was still going on in the area. This is just outside of Kiev. We didn't know anyone when we started, but we've delivered aid now to over 55,000 people, more than the population of Hastings, where I grew up as a kid. And that's, I have to say, Jim, that's thanks to incredible Kiwis who cared here in New Zealand, and great people like my good friend and colleague Ksenia, who's on the line with us today, who put themselves on the line every day to make this happen.
Yes, and I want to introduce Ksenia. I want to ask you a couple more things before we talk to Ksenia, but you're quite right. We should introduce Ksenia Zaborski. Dobry den, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Jim.
Lovely to have you on. And look, I'll get right back to you. But I'm just also curious with Mike, because we've talked about your backstory many times, Mike, so I won't go into that all again. But in terms of difficulty, apart from difficulty on the ground, has charity fatigue also set in with Ukraine? I mean, a lot has happened in the world to distract us from the awful reality. And charities are feeling the squeeze. You know, times are hard. There have been media exposés of high operational costs. They're always investigated in charities. And it must be a hard time, you know, to be in the sector and to keep delivering to the extent you've just been describing.
Well, Jim, it is certainly difficult. The war may not be in the news like it used to be, but as I can, and certainly Ksenia can attest, the war is far from over. So there are still massive needs. Bombs are continuing to fall on innocent families, but public support, international support, has receded. And it's not that I don't think people no longer care, but 4 years is a really long time. Russia expected Ukraine to capitulate overnight. They expected to take the country overnight, but none of us expected 4 years later that families would still be freezing in their homes, still worried if they'd survive the night, and still wondering when the war will finish.
It's quite remarkable, isn't it, in terms of the success you've had as a New Zealand charity, a little country at the bottom of the world, setting out to help the big countries at the top of the world and partnering up with, you know, some of the organisations north of the equator. But just in perspective, it is quite a story.
Well, I think we learned this from our very first aid distribution. This was in Syria 11 years ago. You have no idea what the future looks like when you start an aid intervention somewhere. You've just got to start with the belief that you want to help one person and one family. And this is what we did in Ukraine. We didn't know how we would fund operations beyond the day, but we knew that if we started, we would find like-minded people in New Zealand, Kiwis who cared, who wanted to make a difference, but didn't know how. And this is how a small New Zealand charity is able to solicit that support, leverage that support, and keep helping families 4 years on. And this is not because of relief aid. This is because Kiwis cared enough to show us support to make that happen.
Look, Mike, I know you're not a military analyst, but it is the fourth anniversary with no end in sight. You've been in Ukraine regularly. I'll ask Ksenia a question along these lines. This is a war that is ruining two countries, not just one. What sort of hopes do you have, Mike, that it's going to be over soon?
Well, the war in Ukraine is certainly killing two countries, and unfortunately, I'm yet to see any tangible signs that it's about to end. The electricity network's all but destroyed, and leaving families quite literally, like Ksenia, freezing in their apartments and in their homes around the country. So, unfortunately, I'm not that optimistic. There is a huge gap between what Russia is saying it wants. And even with Ukraine compromising, there are red lines for them. Territory and security guarantees are absolutely needed. But we can only hope.
How did you find Ksenia before we bring her into the conversation, please? I'm curious.
Well, Ksenia was actually our administrator to start with. She came, as many of our staff do, through our networks. She did an incredible job managing our finances, managing our administration functions, managing our teams. But now she runs our operations and has done for the last 3 years in Ukraine. She is a superstar, I have to say.
Ksenia, you're a superstar. Do you remember how you knew the war had begun?
Yes, I remember the day clearly. I had just graduated from university a month before the war. I woke up and saw many missed calls from my mom, and I immediately understood something happened. Then I called my mom, and she said the war had begun. And I didn't believe it for the first 5 minutes. Then I checked news and saw it was true. I remember a huge queues to ATM. People wanted to withdraw cash, a huge queues at petrol station. It was really terrifying.
What was your life like before the Russians attacked?
It was a carefree, stable life with unlimited electricity and heating. I was a student before the war. As a student, my biggest worries were passing an exam to keep my scholarship and how to save some money for have fun with my friends or to buy a new phone. No, it was amazing time.
And what is your life like now? You're near Kiev somewhere, aren't you?
Yes, I live in Irpin. It's a city 10 kilometers from Kyiv, close to Bucha. My days currently depend on the electricity schedule, which changes daily. This means I can only plan my routine for a very short time. Every morning, I check Telegram channels for news about overnight attacks and possible damages to energy infrastructure. If power facilities are affected, I try to do all electricity or hot water related tasks immediately because emergency outages can happen any minute.
The recent Russian attacks are aimed at what? We hear about them. What's the effect on the ground?
This winter, Russians continue its attacks targeting energy infrastructure. Every strike brings a surprise about whether you will have power, water, heating, or not.
What are the air raids and the drone raids, like, we can only imagine what happens at night. Can you describe it?
Yes, I can. I would like to say you are a very lucky person. The worst attack at night, when everywhere is silent and you hear this awful sound of Shahed drones and shots as defenders try to shoot him down. But if the drone change sound, it means that it reaches its target and it's about the strike. So you should bring your backpack and run down the first floor or in the bathroom because you have I don't know 10, 15 seconds.
Mike, you've experienced this aspect yourself when you've been in Ukraine. You've experienced the Russian attacks, haven't you?
Yeah, unfortunately, I've had similar experiences with the attacks of Ksenia, albeit I'm lucky that I get to come back to New Zealand, I have to say. Ksenia is less lucky, along with many families in Ukraine. They don't get to leave. To a certain extent, you have to get used to it. Otherwise, I mean, quite literally, you go crazy. I recall a trip last year. I've been to Ukraine, I don't know, 20 or so times now. But I brought one of our supporters from Canada with me into Kiev, and I remember an air raid alert going off, her coming into my room. I was fast asleep, and she was saying, she's Canadian, Mike, what do we do? And it was stark to see someone new to the experience. And I'm like, well, you could sleep on the floor beside me. You can sleep beside, just below the window in case the windows get exploded so you don't get covered in glass. Or you can go into the bathroom because there's multiple walls there to help protect you if our building is in fact intact. But it was stark to see someone who was not used to this quite literally shaking in fear.
Ksenia, this has been an especially cold winter too, hasn't it?
Yes, this winter is the coldest one we have had in 15 years. Frost up to minus 30 degrees with a lack of heating, electricity, sometimes water. It's hard and terrible. To take a shower with the hot water is a holiday. And I am a lucky person because I have gas stove and a small power station, so I can cook and have an internet connection all time. But in Kyiv, for example, whole district city doesn't have heating because Russians destroyed heating power plant, and they have extremely low temperatures in their apartment. They sleep with many layers of blankets, with bottles with warm water. And really, I can't even imagine how hard it is for them to survive.
People you know have been killed in this war.
Unfortunately. I think every family has a hero. We call heroes all the soldiers who have fallen. In my families, it's a father-in-law. And in 2022, he went to the army as a volunteer. He fell on the 17th February 2024 in the Donetsk region. This is a huge loss for the family, and he was a very kind and loving father, husband. I remember, no, he said he deeply wished to his grandchildren. So and yeah, he was only 50 years old. It's a young man.
Yeah, still a young man. That's right. You have a brother-in-law who has to respond to the missile strikes?
Yes, I have a brother-in-law, yeah, who is firefighter, yes, in Sumer region.
And he has to go out when the missiles have come in and try and put out fires, all that stuff.
And his work now, he works almost every day, and especially at night.
Don't the Russians
Yeah.
send in missiles after the first strikes sometimes to see if they can achieve casualties among the responders, among the firefighters?
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And that's why we have many firefighters who died when doing their job.
I mean, we can only imagine how the elderly survive. Or don't people with chronic health conditions, all that going on. What does a normal day look like for you, Ksenia? Can you describe what you do?
We provide building materials to people who lives in the frontline areas and which homes are damaged because of war.
Even if this war ended tomorrow, Ksenia, how much will remain of people's former lives? You know, your family's lives, the people you know. What will that be like?
Broken hearts, full of sorrow, damaged homes, and the memories of all the horrors we have endured. And but no, despite everything, there is a deep certainty that we can remain the resilience, no matter what happened.
I know the resilience is amazing from this part of the world. How hopeful are the people you talk to that the peace talks will lead to anything?
So my friends and family don't believe that this peace talk will lead to anything, unfortunately.
So, how do they think the war is going to end?
The war will end someday. No one knows exactly when, but we are certain that the day, this day, will come. Maybe not. This year, maybe next year, but it will come.
And that day when the war ends, what will you do with the rest of your life?
I will simply enjoy peaceful sky above my head and mornings without worrying about the news and anxiety. And then I plan to help rebuild our country. And finally, fly somewhere by plane from Kyiv.
May that day come soon. How old are you?
I'm 27.
27. Well, that life is ahead of you, and all the best for what's to come in Ukraine and for peace, Ksenia. Lovely to talk to you.
Thank you, Jim, for this opportunity.
So, Mike, that's Ksenia. And I guess before we go, so what have you got planned as an aid organisation in the near future? There's, gee, I mean, the to-do list is just gigantic, isn't it?
We're doing a campaign at the moment where one of our generous donors have offered to match dollar for dollar for any support that's received. So we would hope Kiwis are still interested in Ukraine. We would hope that they remember that the war is continuing and that they can make a difference. We absolutely have a duty to help families around the world. This is our humanity, our duty of humanity. But the other, at a very practical level, is we have to use support that we're given in the best way possible, not spending it on fancy cars and offices. And this has led to some of the most incredible experiences that I've had, and that is businesses here in New Zealand providing their own support, providing our office in Auckland, for example. Our office in Canada is provided by a property developer. Our accommodation when we travel is provided. Vehicles are provided all pro bono. What this allows us to do is keep to our core principle, and that is if someone gives us support, we're going to spend it delivering help to families in need.
Are you glad you sold that yacht all those years ago and left investment banking and are doing this?
Jim, I have absolutely no regrets in the choices that I've made. I personally, I get more out of our work than I put in, and there's obviously large sacrifices with travel and family involved in this job. But no, I would of course love to still have a yacht, but I would never choose what I do now over that. So no regrets. No change in my life is happening on that regard.
Well, lovely to talk to both of you. It's a pretty sober fourth anniversary, but interesting, so interesting to hear from Ksenia, and good to catch up with you again too, Mike. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks for having us on the show.